Welcome to the second hour's reading of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, this is April reading the Midland Reporter-Telegram for Saturday, October 2, 2021. Viewpoints. Questions for the candidates. At what point is it okay for the city government to step in and call for safety measures? Dan Corrales, at-large candidate. City should follow federal, state laws. Our city government needs to govern as allowed under federal and Texas law, which, pursuant to Governor Abbott's executive orders, means mask mandates, closures, and restrictions cannot be imposed by city government. The pandemic has turned our lives upside down this past year and a half. It has affected all Texans and certainly all Midlanders, and for our generation has been an unprecedented public safety concern. When looking to our government to step in and call for measures, including masking, closures, and restrictions, the balancing act between protecting people and protecting businesses has been difficult, and many ask, what should our government do? It should govern as the U.S. Constitution, and more importantly, our Texas state constitution, allows the government to do as representatives of the people that voted them into office. Our country was founded on freedoms guaranteed by the U.S. Constitution and a government elected by we the people. While federal law is the law of the land, it is worth noting that the 10th Amendment clearly states that the powers not delegated to the United States by the Constitution, nor prohibited by it to the states, are reserved to the states respectively, or to the people. The states and the people. That is important to note. On March 2, 2021, Governor Abbott issued Executive Order GA-34, relating to opening Texas 100% and the removal of the statewide mask mandate. If the city council were to pass any measures, such as masking, closures, and restrictions, that would be a violation of the governor's order and would lead to lawsuits against the city of Midland. I will not be an advocate for any such measures. I will be an advocate for personal responsibility and stress the importance of doing what is right and living up to the civic duty we have to our neighbors. I have pre-existing conditions as the survivor of a brush with death that the Midland firefighters and EMS heroically saved me from. They have saved the lives of many others who now share that status of having pre-existing conditions. This past year and a half is taking a toll on our first responders, so let us show them and our hospital staff the respect that they deserve for doing a job that most would run from the responsibility of. I have a son with special needs at Bynum School, and as a parent on its board of directors, I am aware of our student body that also has pre-existing conditions, and not for one second would I advocate for recklessness that would jeopardize my son's life or that of other students. I'll say again, personal responsibility to do the right thing matters. As a business owner, I also understand the toll the pandemic has taken on our employees and our customers. We are adapting to a fluid situation, but we support anyone's choice, their free will, as is their right, to wear a mask and social distance if they choose to do so. The actions we take as a community to help others in need defines who we are as a community, and that should serve as our moral compass. I am also a God-fearing man and having a spiritual compass that helps me find north, helps me find our Lord, also guides my decisions with faith, that the actions we take should respect the needs of our community and follow the golden rule. Do unto others as you would have them do unto you. Scott Dufford, District 1 candidate. Government shouldn't have unilateral authority. As wordy as my response was last week to the infrastructure question posed by the MRT, the response to this week's question will be very short and to the point. I will start by letting all know my wife, Beth, and I were vaccinated with the Pfizer shot when it was offered in February of this year. We encouraged, not mandated, all our employees to talk with their doctors and at least consider getting vaccinated. not only for their health and their family's health, but the health of those in which they come in contact. Will we get the Pfizer booster? That still remains a question for us, and we will consider it after consulting with our family physician. I've encouraged my vaccinated parents, who are in very good health and in their 80s, to visit with their family physician about receiving the booster at some point as well. My father still plays a lot of golf and works the pro shop window at his favorite municipal golf course in Mississippi, so he is very exposed to the public. There has been so much misinformation and just pure crazy information spread by the media about COVID, such as who's at risk and who is not, remedies, vaccines, masks, closures, mandates, etc. I would block it all out and just speak with people you trust, such as a doctor, health professional, or family physician. They will know what is best for you and your family to stay protected from this very infectious disease. I choose, personally, not to trust the advice of any TV doctor or the personalities who think they are doctors on TV. Nor do I seek advice from any internet searches, and I would encourage all Midlanders to do the same as I have chosen to do. With that being said, no president, governor, county judge, or mayor should have the unilateral authority to mandate anything that takes away our personal freedoms, including mandating vaccines, closures of businesses or schools, or the wearing of masks without approval of their respective legislative bodies. If authority is granted by their respective legislative bodies to mandate any or all of the above, it should be done in consultation with health professionals and economists that have the ability to put politics aside when weighing the risks of shutting down our economy, the damage to our children, and the general well-being of all Americans. A vote for Scott Dufford is a vote for protecting freedom and choice. Dustin Johnson, at-large candidate. City should have limited jurisdiction. I think city government should only be able to call for these items at the city-owned buildings and facilities. I feel it's important for the business owners to make the decisions regarding masks, closures, and restrictions. If they feel it's best to protect their employees, then that's their discretion. And as for schools, it should be up to the individual about masking, and schools should be open to in-person learning, but we need to keep online classes available for those who feel their kids need to stay home. Questions for candidates. There has been a push within the community and the city council for quality of life initiatives, primarily parks. At what point are we upgrading our park system at the expense of other necessities? How do we pay for it? How much of the upgrade must come through partnerships? Or at some point, are tax increases going to be required for full-scale improvements of Hogan, Beale, and other major parks across the city? October 9. The candidate's closing arguments. October 16. Election dates to remember. Deadline to register to vote. October 3. 30 days before the election. Early voting. October 18 through 22, October 25 through 29, at the elections office. Election Day, November 2, 12 locations across Midland County. October 22, deadline to submit an application for ballot by mail. Source, Midland County Elections Office. Who's running? At large, citywide. Dan Corrales, Dustin Johnson, Robin Poole, Spencer Robnett, Michael Trost. Note, top two vote getters earn council seats. Voters can vote for two candidates. District 1, generally North Midland. Scott Dufford, Ross Schumann. Robin Poole, at-large candidate. Cooperative choice is best defense tactic. Russell Kirk wrote that, a nation is no stronger than the numerous little communities of which it is composed. Local government matters. Local leadership matters even more. It is at the local level that we can truly affect change. There is no better example of this than the current COVID-19 pandemic we have collectively lived through. At the local level, we have to make sense of the state and federal mandates that have been issued in the form of executive mandates and handed down to us. During times of such duress, communities coming together through cooperative choice will be the best defense against the threats posed by a COVID-19 world, not through local government intervention. The city's primary goal is to keep the city running and should remain at the forefront of the city council's priorities. Regardless of the challenges we face as a community, the council's job is to ensure that we are keeping up with core functions like trash pickup, providing water, sewer, roads, law enforcement, etc., which are vital to our community health. City council members, as well as staff, need to work closely with our city health department to ensure that we are taking simple, common sense precautions to guard the safety of our city employees so we can continue to deliver city services. As we have seen through the course of the current pandemic, roads continue to be built, work crews continue to maintain sewer lines, and the council continues to meet and pass ordinances and regulate land use through zoning laws. Local government enjoys a unique closeness with its constituents, both in proximity and relationally. That is not seen at the state or federal levels. Local leaders are elected by the very people they work with, go to church with, and even coach Little League alongside of. Due to the proximity between those in leadership and those that they serve, there is a certain kind of connection that is a key responsibility of those elected to local office. It is a responsibility I fear may have been misplaced along the way, a responsibility we cannot afford to forget during times of unrest. That closeness and inclusion will allow us to have discussions and build consensus with the public and residents of our community on how to best ensure safety and preserve freedoms. Reaching those agreements and building public support will ensure those solutions are far more effective than the government mandates we have seen. During a pandemic, the city should be in regular communication with the hospital, as well as other local healthcare professionals. Communication needs to go beyond unified command center meetings and social media posts and take on a more personal approach. Recently, the city provided part of the federal funding it had received to the hospital to pay for overtime and staffing needs due to increased hospitalizations. While that isn't a core city function, city residents need a hospital with appropriate staffing. Times like these are when we need to come together and ensure the needs of our community are met. This is a perfect example of having some flexibility in our roles in order to achieve the best interest of our community. While I do not deem mandates constitutional, I do believe local government needs to remain vocal and encourage individuals to take responsibility for themselves and their families, and allow businesses to make their own decisions as to what they believe is best for their company, employees, and customers. The city can promote measures like early intervention, meeting with personal health care providers to discuss vaccination, staying home when ill, distancing, hand washing, and thorough cleaning, sanitizing. During peak times of infection, the city can also encourage individuals, businesses, and organizations hosting large events to review the number of attendees expected, as well as the size of the venue, and take precautions to ensure the safety of participants. Russell Kirk goes on to say that the permanence of a society is formed by those enduring interests and convictions that gives us stability and continuity. For Midland, that permanence that Kirk speaks of comes from the great people who make up our city, people who have weathered booms and busts, people who endured negative $37 oil, and people who will come out of a COVID-19 world better than they were before. For more information, visit poolforcitycouncil.com. Spencer Robnett, at-large candidate. Residents' consent matters in choices. I have served on the Midland City Council for more than 7 years and have never seen the residents of the City of Midland as engaged and vocal on an issue as I did during the height of the COVID-19 pandemic a year ago. By my estimate, a margin of 25-1 contacted me adamantly opposed to the City Council imposing mask mandates, closures, lockdowns, or other pandemic-related restrictions. So the answer to the question by this paper is really very simple, but has a few moving parts. First, it is okay for the city council to engage in mask mandates, closures, and lockdowns only when the constituents of this community make it clear to me that is what they desire. The consent of the governed and representing the views of those that elected me are very important to the decisions I make on the city council. Even in the face of local panic, hospital overcrowding, and a virus of unknown strength and transmissibility, these principles drive every decision I make on the council. If elected again, I will continue to use those principles when making decisions on your behalf. The overwhelming response from the community was clear. No mask mandates, no lockdowns, no vaccine mandates. And that is how I voted last year and will continue to vote if elected to serve again. Second, it is okay for the Midland City Council to engage in mask mandates, closures, and lockdowns when the benefits of those restrictions outweigh the cost of the alternative. That is, if the public health and societal costs of doing nothing is worse than the public health and societal costs of doing something. In this case, I believed the societal costs of various mandates far outweighed the potential societal benefits of those same mandates. There is a cost to shutting down the Midland economy, requiring masks, taking kids out of school and requiring private business owners to enforce mask mandates or risk fine or closure. Poverty or local recession, isolation and depression, health complications due to delayed elective procedures, increases in domestic violence, and delayed childhood development are all costs of pandemic restrictions that went into my decision to vote against restrictive pandemic policies. A recent report by the CDC shows childhood obesity nearly doubled during the last year, and they attribute it directly to COVID lockdowns. These costs cannot be overlooked. Further, consultation with the chief of police, city management, and the city attorney about the enforcement of mask mandates by the police department or code enforcement also led to a logical decision supporting my no vote on a mask mandate. There were people in Midland ready to challenge mask mandates and lockdown restrictions by force if necessary. I could not vote in good conscience to require our police department to respond to calls every time someone was not wearing a mask in this town, or a business owner did not enforce a city-imposed mask mandate. As we look back on the COVID data collected over the last year, Midland has fared far better than similar-sized communities in West Texas and the state as a whole. I'm not saying the city of Midland has or will always make the right decisions regarding a response to a pandemic, but the data shows that Midland County's per capita infection rate was on average for the state and per capita mortality rate well below average. That does not mean what has happened in this community over the last year is not a tragedy either. It is. Every loss of life is tragic, regardless of the cause. Third, although I voted against a mask mandate, that does not mean I turned a blind eye to the challenges Midland Memorial Hospital faced and continues to face during this pandemic. The City of Midland has allocated nearly $4 million to directly support hospital staff, COVID testing and vaccination, and COVID treatment at Midland Memorial Hospital in the last year. All of these funding requests were brought to council at my request and after consultation with hospital leadership. It was hard to tell by the headlines in this paper that centered around mask mandates, hospital tents, and mobile morgues, but the cooperation and communication between the city and hospital was better in the last year than I have ever seen it. Lack of reporting on this funding and inflammatory articles by this paper calling this cooperation a band-aid on a bullet hole, in light of a mask mandate, were completely out of touch with the impact these funds had on the treatment the hospital was able to provide. Leadership of this paper was so focused on the council mask mandate vote that they emailed city staff requesting a hand vote on the mask ordinance last November, as they were going to send a photographer to the meeting for a picture of the vote on the mask mandate. We have voted electronically and not by a show of hands in the council chamber for nearly 10 years. This request by this paper was purely for front page spectacle and was rightfully denied. It is a shame that the cooperation between the city and hospital was not reported on more, as the mayor, council, city staff, and hospital leadership and hospital staff have done an incredible job and worked tirelessly together during the pandemic. I am proud to have represented the City of Midland as an at-large councilman for the last 7.5 years and would appreciate the opportunity to serve again. If I can speak to your group or you want to know more about our campaign, I can be reached on my cell phone at 432-553-8545 or at spencer@robnetformidland.com. Ross Schumann, District 1 candidate. Residents' liberties should be upheld. This past year was tough on us all. Restrictions in education, entertainment, and necessities, such as grocery shopping and exercise. The pandemic was a tough stretch for every citizen, worrying about the unknown and trying their best to determine the risks and decide their next courses of action. Some had to deal with losing their jobs, having to homeschool their children, and worrying about family and friends as they got sick. The role of our government in these instances is to ensure our systems are prepared for such an event, and as was the case last year, reacting to get the necessary items needed to keep our community ready. This means our city leadership should be focused on providing the proper PPE and equipment for our hospital and doctors, making sure we have enough staff in those facilities to take care of the influx of patients, and finding extra space to house those patients safely if necessary. The city should take steps to ensure their employees are kept safe and not further spreading or exacerbating the situation. Our city leaders should have been coordinating with the state to get access to supplies, temporary medical facilities, and testing kits to provide to our hospitals to have our citizens safe, secure, and knowledgeable about their illness. But we must not forget that throughout the pandemic, we are a nation of free citizens. Sometimes freedoms mean we will not agree with the actions of our neighbors, or that they may not agree with our actions. We must not turn neighbors into enemies or force others to adhere to our desires. As our governor placed a mask mandate across our state, we saw citizens become increasingly hostile to each other over the issue. We saw parents be chastised because their young children would not wear a mask, and we saw basic liberties be refused. In our city, we saw restriction on businesses and occupancy, effectively causing long lines for groceries that only further increased tensions. We saw basic supplies, such as toilet paper and bleach, be bought out and unavailable. We saw local businesses suffer and close, while major retailers were allowed to stay open. We saw more people ordering from online stores out of town, depriving our city of more jobs, income, and sales tax revenue. Yet, we did not see our city leaders call to end these restrictions or mandates from the governor or our local leaders. We did not see any calls for Governor Abbott to bring the state legislature to session to allow our local representatives a say in how our state handled the pandemic. What we saw was our leaders more than willing to allow its citizens to be robbed of their liberties, for our children to be left to miss out on a year of their life, and for our local businesses to be left to hope they could access federal relief to stay in business. This is not acceptable. At no time should our citizens be asked or forced to forego their rights or basic liberties, even in a pandemic. What we know from history is that rights abandoned even temporarily to the government are never restored. We must protect the very core of what makes America sacred, the rights of every individual to determine for themselves. Businesses and churches should be left to decide for themselves what level of risk they are willing to take and what restrictions or precautions they feel are necessary to protect those participating in their services. If a local business decides to place a mask restriction on its customers, then that is their right as the ones who own the property. However, if another business then decides against such a restriction, there should be no governmental mandate about what they can and cannot do on their property. In hindsight, we are now seeing that obesity has a large effect on COVID and its severity. Unfortunately, because of the pandemic, we saw a large portion of our country's population gain weight, with the average person gaining 2 pounds per month. What this means is our body's ability to fight off this infection got lower, making the outcomes for a lot of people much worse. It is vital that our citizens be able to actively exercise if they choose, and that healthy eating options are still available to them by letting restaurants and grocery stores serve their customers. We must ensure our citizens remain free and able to make the decisions they feel are best for them and their families. We also must respect that our neighbors may make different decisions about this than we would like, without coming to despise those who do not act as we wish. As a community, we can overcome anything. I have seen such great things from our citizens when they are left to cooperate and come together. Michael Trost, at-large candidate. Seek out top advice for decision-making. The 50-page charter establishing the City of Midland speaks to how the city is to be governed in the state of Texas. Article 3, Section 23 of our charter specifically outlines the permitted role of the Midland City Council regarding health. It reads, "The City Council shall have the power to provide for a health department and to establish all necessary rules and regulations protecting the health of the city and for the establishment of quarantine stations, pest houses, emergency hospitals, and hospitals, and to provide for the adoption of necessary quarantine laws to protect the inhabitants against contagious or infectious diseases." There is never a right time for government to step in and call for measures, including masking, closures, restrictions, and the like. None of us want to be told what to do by our spouses, let alone our government. But, like most things, we need a governing principle. For me, the governing principle at play here for health, infrastructure, planning, and zoning, or anything else, is that we should always endeavor to get the best advice from the best experts to inform our decision-making to protect the health of the city, as our charter dictates. I think we got great advice. But this once-in-a-generation pandemic has likely taught us a few lessons. 1. Our health professionals are always heroes, regardless of whether we agree or disagree with their advice. We should thank them every day, even when there isn't a pandemic, because at some point, we'll all be on that gurney. 2. The state of Texas, then the county, then city, is the pecking order for things like this. We are at the mercy of everyone above us. It would do the citizens well for us to review our approach to emergencies frequently, not just during a pandemic. Many thanks to Midland County's Emergency Management Coordinator for keeping emergency management apolitical. 3. Our health department is completely understaffed. We need a plan for how we quickly call on all resources to help augment our health department resources. As a fiscal conservative, I would rather have smaller but effective government in these situations. By focusing on preparedness and supporting our healthcare professional and first responders, I believe we can do just that. Although it may be like watching paint dry, I would encourage you to read the City of Midland's charter when you get a chance. http://tx-midland.civic-plus.com/document-center/view/201/city-of-midland-charter?BIDID=. I'm asking you for your vote. If re-elected to serve as an at-large representative on the Midland City Council, I'll continue to show that experience matters, that conservative leadership matters, and that Midland deserves elected officials who say what they're going to do and do it. If approached in this way, Midland is the big winner. Please visit us at trustformidland.com or facebook.com/mbtrust to contact me or find out more. Election dates to remember. Deadline to register to vote, October 3, 30 days before the election. Early voting, October 18 through 22, October 25 through 29 at the elections office. Election day, November 2, 12 locations across Midland County. October 22, deadline to submit an application for ballot by mail. Source, Midland County Elections Office. Who's running? At large, citywide, Dan Corrales, Dustin Johnson, Robin Poole, Spencer Robnett, Michael Trost. Note, top two vote getters earn council seats. Voters can vote for two candidates. District 1, generally North Midland, Scott Dufford, Ross Schumann.
Is it safe to donate platelets regularly? Dear Dr. Roach, I am a 73-year-old male and a frequent platelet donor, 18 to 22 times a year for past 6 years. I used to donate blood, I'm A positive, 4 to 6 times a year. I did both before regularly donating platelets due to what I believed there was a greater need for platelets. Is it safe to give platelets so often? Answer, thank you for donating. There are national shortages in both blood and platelets, but platelets are critically low in many areas and must be used within 5 days of donation. So a steady supply of donations is essential. A single donation of platelets is about 3 to 4 billion platelets, which are needed for blood clotting. One donation will not cause the donor's platelets to go too low, but there is a risk of too low platelets with excess donations. For this reason, the U.S. Food and Drug Administration has placed a limit of 24 donations per year. At this level, low platelets in the donors were rarely seen. You are donating at a safe level. To your good health, Dr. Keith Roach.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.